Big SEC weekend this week. Arkansas playing Ole Miss at Bomb Walker Stadium starting Friday night at 6 o'clock. Arkansas ranked number 22 in the coaches poll this week. Ole Miss ranked number 18. These two teams are tied in the SEC standings at 11 and 10. There's still a big kind of muddled mess there in the middle of the SEC standings. A lot of movement could be made either way for both of these teams. We got Bubba Carpenter here in studio. We'll look ahead to the series against Ole Miss this week. We'll talk about the midweek game yesterday against Northwestern State. I want to tell you our baseball podcast is brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. Also brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. We're also brought to you by Southern Loft. They believe that your home should reflect your unique personality. That's why they offer a wide variety of stylish furniture pieces that are perfect for any taste. Whether you're looking for a new sofa for the living room or a sleek dining table for your kitchen, they've got just what you need when you're looking for that piece of furniture that reflects you. Visit Southern Loft at 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville or call 479-856-6100. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. We put this on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Wherever you're watching or listening to us, we appreciate you being here. Hope you'll subscribe to our channel so you won't miss our other episodes. Like yesterday, we had Patrick McEnroe, the big tennis name, on to talk about this Arkansas tennis situation. Matt Brown from the Extra Points newsletter, he also joined us. Really enjoyed that conversation, kind of taking a unique look at the Arkansas tennis situation and college tennis at large. You can find that on our Whole Hog Sports podcast channels. Again, YouTube, Spotify, Apple is where you can find those shows. Arkansas beat Northwestern State 5-2 yesterday at Bomb Walker Stadium. Northwestern State hit a home run in the first inning, and after that, Arkansas really shut them down from a pitching perspective. Colin Fisher gave Arkansas 4 really good innings. They got an inning apiece from Steele Eaves, Parker Coyle, and Ethan McElvain. Razorbacks do just enough offensively, scored the go-ahead run in the 7th, added to the lead in the 8th, and they win this game 5-2. They won their 30th game, Bubba, in their 46th game this year. And I knew that it was going to be a lot different than past years, you know, just because they got off to such great starts. Mm-hmm. But it kind of struck me. It's like, I looked this up. The previous 2 years, they won their 30th game in their 33rd game of the season. The 2 years before that, they won number 30 in game number 37. And then in 2021, when they had that great team that was number one for most of the year, they won number 30 in game 35. You actually got to go back to 2016, when they didn't even win 30 games at all, to have a pace like they're on right now. Now, this is a lot different than that year, obviously, because they didn't make the tournament. They didn't have a winning record. But it just kind of – I mean, I think we all know that this year feels different than a lot of the past years have, but that kind of hammers at home that – you know, that race to 30 took a lot longer to get to this year.
Yeah, it's crazy to think how quick in those other years they got there. I mean, I never really looked at it that way, I guess. That's good research on your part, by the way.
That's all I do is just sit there and look up numbers all day.
No, but, I mean, the key is we got to 30 wins. Yeah. And I feel like we're trending in the right way. I just see the potential there. And I think Dave said something about what you want to see the next – you know, these last 9 games. Mm-hmm. By the way, I can't believe the midweek game's already over with, and there's nine games left.
I think Arkansas usually plays better, and it may not just be Arkansas, but, you know, I watch so many of their games. I think they play better when the midweek games end.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's a I don't know, crispness maybe is the right word. It almost sounds like Christmas, I said, but crispness that you see from them when they're not having to worry about Tuesday and Wednesday games. And I will tell you, they banged the game on Tuesday. You know, they probably could have played it if they really wanted to be, you know, because the rain did move out, I think, in the 7 o'clock range. They probably could have played it, although, you know, the field took a little bit of a beating because it did rain so hard earlier in the day. I don't think you're going to hear anybody from Arkansas's side, though, that's going to be upset that they didn't have to play five games this week.
Yeah, I think that was a welcomed rainstorm. Mm-hmm. When I saw it coming in, I started thinking, I wonder if we're just going to bang this.
Mm-hmm.
And it did rain hard there for a minute, but it was, you could tell that it was going to rain then move out. Mm-hmm. I think Dave said something about it was supposed to linger or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. My phone said it was going away. But yeah, it was probably welcomed because there were some guys we didn't want to pitch. And I think had we played the two games, there would have been guys that we might have had to pitch that we didn't want to.
Did you even get to the stadium?
Mm-mm.
You didn't go Tuesday night.
You know what I'm doing, believe it or not? I'm on my tractor. I'm brush hogging, texting Phil, looking at the weather, saying there's no way we are going to play at 6 o'clock.
Mm.
And then I asked Phil, are we going on at 5:30? And he said, not if they bang it before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I waited till the last minute, and I get off the tractor like 5 minutes till 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I got to hurry to get to the stadium. Yeah. And then about the time, not long after they banged it. So, yeah.
I usually get there an hour and a half before the game starts. But for whatever reason, I didn't go until, and it wasn't even rain related, I didn't go until a little bit later that day. And I'm pulling in the parking lot as I get a phone call like, hey, the game's been canceled.
Yeah.
So I had two options. I either could, you know, I could have gone under the press box and got a story written about, you know, the cancellation. But then I started hailing. I'm like, I think I can just write this from the truck.
Yeah.
So I just sat in the parking lot for about 45 minutes working and until I got it done and went home. I'm glad there wasn't a game. You get to a certain point, it's like, enough is enough. Like one midweek game a week, I think, is enough. These double midweeks. I was really surprised, and I think I couldn't get a feel when I was talking to Chris Bertrand, the head coach at Northwestern State. Like, were they willing to schedule two this week because they knew they didn't have a series this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, I think he told me, he's like, I can't really go back to that time and tell you what was going through my mind. He said, I'm sure that was a consideration at some point. It was something that I noticed at some point. But you don't see these double midweek games this late in the year very often. I mean, this is stuff that you see like late February, early March.
See, I'm different. I wanted to play.
Really?
Yeah, I really wanted to play. I like the midweek games because
– But you weren't a pitcher.
What's that?
You weren't a pitcher.
No, I wasn't. But I like to see guys play. It's fun for me because I get to see guys play. They don't get to play a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get some guys out of the bullpen you haven't seen in a while.
From a hitting perspective, you want to.
Mm-hmm. Just absolutely.
Keep going and going and going,
yeah,
right?
You want to kind of pad those stats, which, you know, they threw some pretty good dudes at us last night. I like the way they kind of pitch backwards. They're around the strike zone. Thought our hitters did a pretty good job. You know, what'd we have? 11 hits, 6 walks. We only struck out 3 times. Mm-hmm. So thought we did a pretty good job.
And left a lot of base runners.
Yeah, a lot of base runners. And I thought that last dude they brought in had really good stuff. Mm-hmm. I think he's our closer.
Mm-hmm.
Shorter guy, like quick arm, a lot to look at, hands up real high, and then all of a sudden the ball's coming out. So, yeah.
Well, the guy they started, Dylan Marino, he's potentially going to be the Southland pitcher of the year. He'd thrown like 70 and two-third innings this year, 10th most innings that anybody's thrown in college baseball this season. I think it's a two-time reigning conference pitcher of the week. It was interesting. When I was talking to their coach on Monday, I asked him, I said, do you think, you know, with not having a weekend series, I said, do you think you'll use any of your weekend guys, bring them in like a relief role, like, you know, use it as a bullpen outing? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And then, lo and behold, Wednesday, there's Dylan Marino starting. And, I mean, it was, again, I think it was meant to be kind of like a bullpen type deal where you just get one inning from him, get him out of there. But I did think that was kind of interesting because that was a surprise to see him start.
Well, in the pregame show, I said that, you know, I heard an interview from the coach, and they said he wasn't going to throw any of his weekend guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then Phil tells me on air, well, actually, they're starting there.
They're Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. So, but he had good stuff. Threw a couple fastballs, 94.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, none of them were strikes. I don't think he threw a fastball strike the whole time he was out there, but he leaned real heavy on that little cutter he threw, which looked like a good pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell he's got good stuff.
What did you think about Tate McGuire's start? Because I think – I don't know this for sure, but in listening to Van Horn's pregame show with Phil yesterday, he kind of hinted at maybe using McGuire in a larger role on the weekend. And I wonder – now, I know it wasn't going well for him, but I wonder if maybe there was a little bit of a thought that, hey, you're not going to throw him very much in case you do need him on the weekend now.
Well, when the game first batter comes up, and Phil makes a comment on the air about, you know, this team doesn't have much power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're, you know, I forget how many home runs they'd hit, but they're not really a power team. Then a dude hits one like 101 to right field, no, mm-hmm. 106, I think, to right field. Next dude hits a home run. Mm-hmm. Next guy hits it over 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, are you sure about that, Phil?
Yeah.
But then after that, they didn't really do much. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Tate, you know, they were hitting his fastball. It looked mm-hmm. like they were jumping his fastball. I think every hit they had off of Tate was off fastball.
So. And Colin Fisher came in, threw four good innings. I continue to think that, like, this role for him in the midweek is where he can be most effective for this team, just because it hasn't gone well for him in SEC play.
Yeah.
But when he's throwing against these teams they're playing in the midweek, and certainly similar type teams that they played in the non-conference when he was having a lot of success, you know, that has been a good role for him. And it's when you've got maybe a little bit of I don't know if I'd call it depth issues, but depth questions in the bullpen. It's nice to be able to have somebody who can come out and eat innings like that in a midweek game for you.
Yeah, and you know, he missed a couple times. I think he hit a guy with a first pitch curveball, then he hit another guy with a 2-2 curveball. He hit a lefty with an 0 curveball or slider, and then a 2-2 pitch. I want to say he backed legged a right-handed batter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's gotten him trouble is hit batters. Mm-hmm. You know,
a lot of times in two strike counts.
Yeah. And so, but after that, he settled down and did really good. I mean, he had his changeup working. Breaking ball was good. Spotted his fastball, threw some good fastballs in. So I thought he had a good day.
Cujillo Aloy had a good day. Carter mm-hmm. Rutenbar had a good day at the plate. Those are the two that stand out to me from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah, I was actually going to interview Cujillo after the game, and I text Oliver all the time and say who I've got, and mm-hmm. and then you know, I go down to the dugout and I'm looking around, and Oliver tells me, you know, Cujillo's gone.
Yeah.
He didn't waste any time
getting
out of there, but I wanted to talk to him. You know, he had one ball, 115 up the middle, line drive up the middle, and base hit, and it was good at bat, and I think he had gotten ahead in the count, got a fastball. But the swing that I liked the most, and I was going to talk to him about this, was I think he hit it 88 mile an hour to left field.
Mm-hmm.
It was a two strike, two out curveball or slider.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed on the ball, stayed through it, didn't hit it hard,
mm-hmm.
but at least he stayed on it and got it through the infield and got an RBI.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, believe it or not, I like that swing more than I like the 115 to center, because that's the kind of swing we need out of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that two-strike swing where he stays on a pitch. And then he drew a walk, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scored two runs. So I thought he had a really good night. And usually, Matt, you can tell when a guy starts walking, drawing more walks, that means he's seeing the ball well. That's a good sign that they're usually getting ready to really get on a roll.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's the case with Cujillo, because he's a guy that we really need in that lineup.
Yeah, you think back a few weeks ago, and I can't remember at what point in the season this was, but you know, Van Horn really kind of, I think, publicly challenging the older hitters. Mm-hmm. And I thought Cam Kozel took to that challenge. You know, he's hit pretty well since then. Aloy, he's still been very intermittent in terms of, you know, his production, but you just think, you know, you kind of go back to the thought process whenever Van Horn made that comment. You know, it's like, if you can get these guys going, mm-hmm. you've seen what they can do. You know, in Aloy, I know his SEC numbers weren't as good as they were in the non-conference last year, but he still hit 291 in the SEC. What's he hitting in the SEC right now?
211.
So, I mean, like you know that there's still more potential in that bat. If you can get a 291 Cujillo Aloy over the last 3 weeks of the SEC season, think about how much more production that is than you've gotten out of him, you know, to this point in the year. So,
yeah,
you're right. I mean, I think they really got to get him going and hope that these last couple of games for him. And really, I think there have been more good games for him in the last, say, 2 weeks than there have been bad games.
Yeah.
Probably going back to UAPB when they played them down in North Little Rock when he had a few hits. I think he had a three-hit game that weekend when they played in conference play. So, like if you can get him going, boy, you just think about how much different that could make the lineup look.
Well, he can carry a team once he gets hot. But you look at his numbers at SEC, he's 211. He's got two home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And we know he's way better than that. He's just, you know, the swing's just a little bit off. Mm-hmm. You know, when if he's, you know, we always talk about staying, you know, getting in the zone early, staying through the zone a long time. Cahill's, if he's late, he's popping it up to the right side. If he's early, he's humping over the top of the ball, hitting a ground ball to third. Mm-hmm. That's kind of your classic under-over swing. And you see signs of it starting to flatten out a little bit and stay through the zone better. So hopefully we'll get more of that Cahill later in the season.
I think that was after the Auburn series when Van Horn made those comments. So that would have been after the fourth week of the season. So it's been 3 weeks since he did. Cahill's batting average at that point in SEC play was 147. So it's 211. Still not good. But I do think you see that trajectory going up for him.
Yeah.
Will that be 64 points?
Yeah, and I like the fact that he's drawing walks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's laying off. I think teams think he's going to chase, so they throw that slider away and they try to get him to chase it. They elevate a fastball, and he's not swinging at it like he was. So that's a good sign.
Kozel went out yesterday. Looked like maybe he hurt his ankle on that collision he had at the plate. And he's been playing with a bad ankle since the Missouri series. Anything you think to be worried about there with him?
No, I saw him after the game. He was the last one out on the field, talking to fans, you know, playing with the kids and doing stuff like that. So I think he's fine. I think if there was a problem, he would already be up there getting treatment. So I think he's fine. It looked like to me, you had texted me, and I thought he was limping on the way to the plate. It looked like to me he was kind of had
on
a little
the run.
Yeah, when he was running home. After that tag up, he did a good job of getting back to the bag on that. That ball was hit 111 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Left fielder's coming in, made a really good play.
It's kind of surprising to see him run because he had come so far down the line and had to go so far back to third. I said in the press box at the time, I said, that tells me that they don't really fear that left fielder's arm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he had a cannon out there because – when you're an outfielder and you're running in like that and you've got that much momentum behind you, I thought it was going to be a close play.
I did too.
Or a lot closer.
Yeah, it ended up being a close play. There were a couple of plays like that, collisions at home plate. What did you think about the obstruction call that was overturned the next inning?
So when I first saw it, I thought, oh, yeah, that's obstruction for sure. And then they showed a different angle of it, and I thought they got the call right. I thought that, you know, he was sliding in to field the ball. The ball was thrown up, you know, inside the line. So he had to get the ball. So I thought it was a good call.
So the rule there is that, like if he had fielded the ball and he just sits there on the line, that is clear obstruction.
Yeah.
But the rule there is that he has to be able to have the ability to go get the ball.
Yeah.
And you can't call obstruction. Tell me if I'm wrong, but you can't call obstruction because he is in the process of going to get the ball.
Right. So his – the throw took him inside the line, right in the path of Rutenbar, who was rounding third, coming home. So, I mean, he slid all the way outside the line to field that ball. And, you know, in the beginning, when they first showed it, it looked like to me he set up in the baseline, but that wasn't the case.
I wonder if that's one of those rules, and I don't know. I'd have to look this up. I wonder if that's because, you know, there are some rules where – like in basketball, you can't go back and retroactively call goaltending. So a lot of times you get goaltending called on the court, and then you go review it to see. Like, I wonder if that's one of those rules in baseball where you have to call it obstruction on the field in order to be able to see whether it actually was or not. Like where you can actually review it. I don't know, but I wondered that in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably right. Because once you go back and review it and you break it down frame by frame, you realize, oh, wow, he was actually going to the ball.
Interesting.
Where in the beginning, it didn't look like it. In the beginning, I thought he was clearly blocking Rutenbar's path to the plate.
I wanted to ask you about Reese Robinette's base running yesterday. Because it seemed like, you know, he got thrown out at the plate. That one was cut and dry, probably not a great decision. But there was also a play where he's at first, there's two outs, and Kozel hits a double to center field, and he only makes it to third base. And it looked like he froze a little bit. Or maybe I think it's that play, because I think there was another play, too, where maybe he froze like between first and second. Did you see anything from him base running yesterday that just didn't look right?
No, other than he you know, he doesn't run like Sousa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 If you got Damian Ruiz at first, he's probably halfway between third and home by the time that guy drops the ball in center.
The one at home, are you talking about the ball that Kojel hit back to the pitcher?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's just a down angle read.
Is it?
They're just reading straight down angle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that. If the ball's 5 feet either way, mm-hmm. he's safe at home plate. Mm-hmm. But it just happened to be right at him. By the way, the track man had to have missed the pitch. It showed 52 miles an hour. Was it 52 or 54 miles an hour on that pitch from the pitcher, the changeup mm-hmm. that Kojel hit off the end of the bat?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way it was that slow. I think Trackman must have misread that.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't see it. I didn't see that.
Yeah,
that
I made happened. A comment on there, and I can't remember. It was either 52 or 54, and I've been looking at it like there's no way that pitch was that slow. But yeah. Kojel was way out front.
So you've got Trackman right there by you mm-hmm. in the game. In order for me to see Trackman, I got to look past like seven people to my left. And a lot of times people, you know, they'll have their head down. They're looking at their computer or something. And I'm like trying to – it's like if you ever watch Polar Express – the Christmas movie.
Yeah.
You know, like where he's trying to see Santa Claus at the end. He's like trying to look around everybody. That's how I am whenever I'm trying to see Trackman during a game. I wish they would give me one of those iPads they give you guys. That'd be nice.
Just bring your own.
Well, then I still got to figure out how to get into Trackman. Trackman, like it's like trying to crack into a government website. You cannot get into Trackman unless
it's hard.
Somebody's got the keys to turn it for you.
So every once in a while, something will go wrong in the middle of the game, and it'll log me out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like in panic mode, and I'm trying to – it's so hard to get the login, the password, and everything right. So the game's going on, and – you know, feels like, why aren't you saying anything? I'm over here like sweats dripping down because my Trackman's not working.
you become pretty dependent on that, don't you?
You know what? I love it. And I was mad last night because they didn't have the strike zone. I don't know why. It wasn't SEC. I know the
SEC
rest of
game.
The year. Yeah, they didn't have it. I texted Oliver and he didn't know why.
Hmm.
I love having the strike zone.
Well, I think they ought to have the strike zone in the – and for people who don't know, the SEC – last year allowed the coaches to have the tablets in their dugouts. I think it was last year. It was the first year they could do this. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was there's Trackman in the stadium. And for non-conference games, you can see the strike zone. You know, pitch was inside, outside, in the zone, out, whatever. During SEC games, they take the strike zone away because – you know, I have my beliefs who this role was intended for, but they didn't want a coach running out of the dugout with an iPad to say, look at what you just missed.
Yeah.
I think that's why they did it. I mean, I really think that's why they did it. I am of the belief that you should be able to trust the coaches to be professional and that we all should be able to see the strike zone all the time. I also think that strike zone ought to be publicly available to people like it is in Major League Baseball.
You're giving a few coaches a lot of credit there that I don't know they deserve.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. I think the one they were worried about is not in the SEC or college baseball anymore.
I think you're right. But, yeah, you're right. You ought to be able to be a grown-up. You ought to have the strike zone in there. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think it's one of those rules that's kind of a head-scratcher. So it's like, yeah, okay. But I do – you know what I like about it? I like seeing the shapes of the different pitches, you know. Are they more horizontal, are they more vertical? I can mm-hmm. see with my eyes, but it helps to be able to look at TrackMan and kind of tell how nasty that pitch was.
Mm-hmm. Reminder, our baseball podcast is sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a local shop that's been family-owned for three generations. They've built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way, and that kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident. H&R Tire and Auto. I sent you this yesterday. The Baseball America has updated their draft prospect rankings this week. Ryder Helfrich is up to number 10 overall. Like I had a feeling going into the year that he was going to be a first round pick. But you know, first of the year, you're talking about him in these projections at like 27, 24, somewhere in that range. And then, you know, kind of get midway through the season, he bumps up to like 17. And now he bumps up to 10. You know that these Baseball America people who are putting these projections together are informing their rankings on what the scouts are telling them,
yeah.
which tells me that the scouts are in love with what they've seen from him this year.
Yeah, I think so. I heard that Scott Service was in at the Mizzou series, and Scott Service really likes him. Mm. Do you remember him? He was a catcher.
Mm-hmm. I remember the name.
He's with the he's like a special assistant to the GM or something with the Padres, I believe. But I love Scott Service. He was with the Rockies when I was with the Rockies, and yeah, I like him. I like him a lot. He's a good guy. But yeah, supposedly he really likes Helfrich.
So sir, he's with the Padres now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember his role. He's like special assistant to the assistant or something like that. But he's a guy that if he likes you, you're in good shape. And I've heard that he really likes Helfrich. So that's a good sign.
It's interesting because Helfrich's numbers really are not as good as I thought they were going to be this year. I mean, when you watched him hit in the fall or even the preseason, I'm sitting here thinking that this is a guy who's going to hit 350 this year with 20-something home runs, you know, probably 50, 60 RBI. It's just a matter of there just hasn't – and the, you know, the RBI part especially, there just hasn't been a whole lot of production around him mm-hmm. in the lineup. But I wonder, do you think that's affected the batting average, you know, maybe some of the other, you know, metrics that we see from him?
Well, first of all, I think people, they look at RBI and they're like, oh, a guy's not driving in runs. Well, an RBI is a team thing, mm-hmm. believe it or not. You got to have guys on base to drive in runs. So that doesn't mean he's not productive. That just means a lot of times, I mean, sometimes a guy's not productive, but mm-hmm. most of the time with a guy like Helfrich, it just means he's not got enough runners on base when he's hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a situation where there's runners on base, first base is open, and like, eh, let's just kind of pitch around him. Not mm-hmm. an intentional walk, but an unintentional intentional walk. We'll see if he chases, and we'll let him take his walk and mm-hmm. go to first base. I think that's what's happening. But I still say, you look at his stats right here, Matt, SEC only sitting 278. That's the hardest 278 in the SEC, I think.
Because you think he's a hard luck hitter.
He's a hard luck hitter. He has hit so many balls deep. It's like if the wind's blowing out in from left, he hits it to left. If it's mm-hmm. blowing in from right, he hits it hard to right. He's had a lot of line outs. I don't know how many times he's lined out to short,
mm-hmm.
lined out to left. I think he's had a tough luck year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you look at him, you look at him as a whole. Just look at what you're getting. I mean, who wouldn't want a Ryder Helfrich on their team? Mm-hmm. Tough guy. I tell my guys all the time, play tough, be mm-hmm. tough. Other guy might be better, but you can be tougher. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to find a guy tougher than Ryder Helfrich.
He's hard on himself, too.
Yeah, but he's the kind of guy that you want on your team. I don't care what it says on paper. The dude's a stud, and I think he's going to play in the big leagues for a long time.
You hear a bad word or two out of him whenever he strikes out, especially like when the stadium's fairly empty like it was yesterday. He struck out once, and boy, everybody in the stadium heard what he shouted to himself. And I will say this, you know, on the numbers, I mean, he's got – so his season total, he's got 14 home runs. He's got 41 RBI. He still could get to those, you know, like that 20 home run, yeah. 60 RBI type season. But it would take a lot of production against really good teams. Whereas I think a lot of times when you have those types of seasons, you really kind of eat early in the year. And then, you know, your stats will fall off a little bit. Here's one thing to think with Helfrich, though. We talked about Aloy. Helfrich last year, he got a lot better late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's going to be that way this year. He's having to catch a lot. I feel like there's less days off. What's he had? One day off behind the plate? I think one day off.
I think so.
Carter Rutenbar started for him, I think, against UCA.
Yeah.
I think that's the only day he's had off. It feels to me like he's catching more. And so I wonder if maybe that's affecting the offensive performance more. Because, I mean, you're at that point now where you're playing nothing but SEC games until the NCAA tournament, and then you're playing the most important games of your season. So I can't see, I can't foresee an instance really where, you know, unless it's like the last two or three innings of a blowout, where you're just able to get him off of his feet, where he's not catching this year.
And I don't think Dave would be able to get him out from behind the plate.
He doesn't want to come out.
Yeah, he wants to catch every game. That's his mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what drain that puts on. You know, they talk about how by the end of the year, all the drain of, mm-hmm. you know, just the pressure of calling pitches and, mm-hmm. and everything takes its toll on you. But I don't know if it affects a guy like Ryder. I really don't. I think he embraces that, and I don't think he'd want to be anywhere else.
Hunter Dietz's stock continues to go mm-hmm. way up. He's up to number 55 in this Baseball America projection.
Well, I think that's low for him.
Yeah. Well, it feels like this could be – here's what I think is going to happen with Hunter Dietz. I think we're going to get into the draft, and there's going to be somebody in those sandwich picks mm-hmm. or the second round, early second round, who really likes him.
Yeah.
And he comes off the board way before some people think that he might ought to.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he's gotten better every week. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a low number for him.
Well, he started outside the top 200 mm-hmm. in the preseason, and I think a lot of that was just because people knew who he was, but they wanted to, you know, it's like show me that you can do this. And then I think he got into like the 70s or the 80s, and so he took a pretty good bump again. Gabe Gackle's gone down. I mean, he was projected to be a first rounder. He's down to number 68 in these projections right now, and I don't think that's surprising based on the season that he's had.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a guy's stuff and, you know, it's not – the stats don't always tell the real story. But I think with Gabe right now, I think he's – you know, he's struggled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's trending up. His mm-hmm. velo's coming back up. I think you're going to see him come up a little bit more. You know, hopefully he'll finish strong.
I won't give all these away, but I'll mention two others here real quick. Damian Ruiz has jumped into the top 400. It feels like he's done a pretty good job for himself this year from just from a draft perspective. And then Carson Wiggins is at number 141. I asked Dave Van Horn about Carson last night after the game, and he basically just said he doesn't have an update right now. And I think he said, even if I had one, I don't know if it's my place. It was kind of an interesting it felt to me like a change of tone in how he's talked about Wiggins here previously, whether it be at the Swatters Club or some other times, whenever he's been asked about Carson Wiggins. We'll see. I mean, the thought 3 or 4 weeks ago was that Wiggins might be able to pitch for him in May. We'll see. I mean, he's at number 141 here. So you know that he's going to get drafted if the number's right. And that's always mm-hmm. the caveat that I like to throw in there for baseball, because the number's got to be right for them to get drafted. But, you know, the scouts still really like him, even though he hadn't pitched this year.
Well, you think about 141 puts you around a fifth round. The money slot there is around $500,000,
mm-hmm.
give or take. You know, I'm sure if he went, I'm sure they'd work out a deal. He'd probably get more than the slotted
they
value.
They find savings somewhere else. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like these teams, they can manipulate that. You know, hey, we'll take a senior who's got no draft leverage in the eighth round and take $400,000 in savings and put it toward this.
I'd be surprised if he went that late. I think someone's going to take him on his potential.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he does end up going there, I think he's crazy if he signs. If he comes back here and pitches, he could go 1-1 next year and sign for what, $8 or $9 million
or more.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go 1-1, you're that's a big number.
So what is the 1-1 slot?
Gosh, I think it's above $10 million now, isn't it?
Oh,
I mean, think about Hagen Smith. Hagen Smith went fifth, and he got $8 million.
Yeah,
from the White Sox. So, you know, now I don't know that anybody is paying slot value for a first round or first overall pick, but I think the slot value is up there. It's probably in the $11 million range now. I don't know that. I haven't looked at it here of late, but I'm basing that on Hagen Smith 2 years ago going fifth overall and getting $8 million. I would think that 1-1 would be over 10.
Well, if he does stay at 141, I don't think $500,000 is going to get him. I don't think $800,000 is going to get him. I think what we all need to do is collectively as Razorback fans is get our wallet out and say, come on, Carson, come on back, buddy. And let's go first round pick next year.
Okay. This is according to MLB.com. 1-1 this year, the slot value, $11,350,000. So,
yeah. Would you rather have $500,000 or $11 million?
Is that a real question? I mean, I think we all know the answer to that, right?
But here's what's probably happening, and who knows if he's going to pitch. Let's say he doesn't pitch, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, you know. Who knows if he's got an agent that's probably behind the scenes. He might already have an agreement with a team saying, look, we're not going to pitch him this year.
Yeah.
If you'll give him – we're going to go give him this much money – he won't throw another pitch. Mm-hmm. That way no one else sees him,
mm-hmm.
and we'll give you this much money not mm-hmm. to pitch. And
you're not saying that happens with him. You're just saying that that's a realistic could happen with players. I'm sure that happens with players.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I don't know that that's happened. That's just Bubba Carpenter's speculation,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wrong quite a bit. So
well,
who
I said
knows?
With Wiggins, there's a lot of people who are going to have to say in whether or not he pitches this year. Mm-hmm. Coaches, trainers, surgeon, agent, probably parents,
yeah.
Carson, you know, who knows who all is in that conversation. That's why I have felt like it has felt maybe less likely that he pitches than likely than he pitches. Now, I will say that's based on kind of January thought process that I've carried with me.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I've heard Van Horn talk, you know, prior to yesterday, you know, whether it be at Swatters Club, whether it be, you know, when he's asked about him, say like in a pregame interview on TV, whatever, maybe I felt like it's more optimistic that he'll pitch than I did three or four months ago. But I've still just kind of had this feeling, and I don't know if it's a gut feeling or what, that it just has felt like it's not as likely that he does pitch. And then I've even wanted to tell people this, even if he pitches, keep in mind, he's coming off of Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
And there's still a buildup that has to happen with that. So it's like, it's not like you get Carson Wiggins back and he's going to go out there and throw five or six innings for you the first time out.
No.
There's that ramp up that he has to have. And so I've wanted people to just kind of tamper their expectations for if he does come back, because if you get him back, maybe you only get an inning out of him. Maybe it's a really good inning. But there's got to be that build-up time.
Well, I said at the beginning of the year, we'll probably never see Carson out there on the mound again in a Razorback uniform. But I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I hope, you know, I'd like to think that he's back next year. He's our Friday night guy, and he goes in the first round.
That's the recruiting pitch.
Yeah.
And Dave has talked about that in the Swatters Club meeting. In fact, he told the Swatters Club, or the people in the crowd, he's like, you know, come talk to me. You know, we got to, you know, let's all chip in here.
Pass the hat around.
Exactly. Yeah, pass the hat at the Swatters Club. Hey, real quick before we get to Ole Miss, the Baseball America and D1 Baseball put out their latest projections for the NCAA tournament. Baseball America has Arkansas in Corvallis playing Oregon State. They've got Oregon State as the number 10 overall seed. Arkansas is the number 23 overall seed. And remember, we talked last week about how you kind of have to fit in these quadrants now. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different how they're putting the tournament together or the regional matchups together. D1 baseball, however, and this is what I've had in my mind that I think is potentially going to happen so long as this team's quadrant and Arkansas's quadrant match up, D1 baseball has Arkansas in Lincoln playing Nebraska as the number 2 seed, and they've got Nebraska as the number 12 overall seed. They've got Arkansas as the number 24 overall seed. I keep thinking, like, Arkansas, if you're Arkansas, you just keep – first off, you keep winning. That's the number one goal. But if you're looking at, you know, possibly getting yourself into a favorable regional from a travel perspective, you know, I think they could go to KU and win it. I think they go to Nebraska and win it. That's not saying anything bad about those teams. It's just I think Arkansas could, you know, like – I think if you're a team that's going into Lincoln or Kansas, whether you're Arkansas or whoever else is the number 2 seed, you like that better than, say, if you're going into North Carolina or Georgia Tech or, you know, a team like that. And so I think if you're Arkansas, if you can just keep winning and kind of, like, keep yourself in that conversation as one of the top 4 to 8 number 2 seeds,
mm-hmm.
you could potentially get slated in Lawrence or Lincoln and it not be such a burden from a travel standpoint.
So is there a scenario where we win the next 3 series and we still host?
I still think it's unlikely.
Yeah. Phil and I were talking on the air last night, and Phil got my hopes up because he's like, if you win, you know, a lot of it depends on what happens above us. I mean, this weekend, yeah. I mean, you look at all the teams that are playing this weekend that are very consequential to us. You know, Auburn at 8 a.m., Mississippi State at Texas, Florida, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, Vandy at Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri, Georgia, and South Carolina, LSU. That is blah. Mm-hmm. But all those other games are teams that are right in that middle. There could be – you could see some separation finally this weekend.
And, like, you know, SEC tournament, there's a conversation to be had there, too, for your seeding in Hoover. Like Arkansas and Ole Miss, for instance, they're tied for sixth right now in the conference standings. Ole Miss or Oklahoma's tied with them too. Of course, OU comes in here next week. But you know, if you're a top eight seed, you don't have to play until Thursday. If you're a top four seed, you don't have to play until Friday. I don't think Arkansas is going to be able to get to a top four. But if they're a top eight, they don't have to play until Thursday. That's a big difference playing on Thursday versus playing on Wednesday, just in terms of, you know, how you have to use your pitchers. And it's different now with the single elimination, and we can have that conversation closer to Hoover. But RPI, Arkansas is number 28 right now in the RPI. And again, you look at D1 baseball, they've got Arkansas as the number 23 overall seed, or D1 baseball's got them as the number 24. Baseball America's got them as the number 23. That tells me they've still got a long way to go to be even in the hosting conversation. I think that there's just not enough time, even if they were to get really hot here at the end of the year. To become a host. I don't see it happening.
Yeah. Well, never say never. I haven't given up yet.
Ole Miss comes in here. They're pretty good again this year. This looks to me more, Bubba, like a Bianco team where they got those big physical guys that look good getting off the bus, hitting there in the middle of the lineup. But they kind of feel kind of like a boom or bust team as far as a hitting team this year. It's a lot of home runs. But it's also a lot of strikeouts with them. They lead the SEC in strikeouts, at least in conference-only play, with 251.
Yeah, that's a big number. We've struck out 222 times in conference-only. But, they're leading the conference in strikeouts. That's a lot of punch-outs right there.
I mean, 251 strikeouts in 21 games. You're talking about over 10 a game.
And it's not like they're a huge home run team. I mean – we've hit more. They've hit 27 home runs in SEC play.
Mm-hmm.
We've hit 32. If you're striking out that many times,
when they're winning, they're hitting home runs. Yeah. I think that's the key with them. And I was talking to somebody who's watched them a lot this year earlier today, and you know he said, look at Mississippi State. When they played Mississippi State, the wind was blowing in. They got swept. When they played LSU, wind was blowing out, and they swept LSU. Now, whether or not I know LSU and Mississippi State. Like those two teams, it feels to me like they're miles apart this year in terms of how good they are.
Yeah.
But it does seem like, you know, Georgia, I think the wind was blowing out on that day when Ole Miss was able to come back from an 8-0 deficit and beat Georgia. So I do think that maybe there is something there to that. And I'm sure you're asking yourself, what's the wind going to be like this weekend at Baumwalker Stadium? It's blowing out game one and two. Should be blowing in more game three.
Yeah. Yeah, I already looked at the weather.
Yeah.
Like, 12 miles an hour north wind.
Friday. So, yeah, here I've got National Weather Service. Number one, it's going to be cooler, at least for these first 2 days. Sunday's supposed to be 75, but the high on Friday and Saturday is 65 and 66, and you've got north winds at about 10 miles an hour both days.
Yeah. It's all right. They still got to face Hunter Dietz. That cutter's going to cut a little bit more when he's pitching into the wind.
Mm-hmm. So and when it's cold.
Yeah.
A little more bite to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you wonder about that stat. You told me that stat earlier with the wind blowing in versus the wind blowing out. Now, I did watch them play. I watched the Friday night game against Georgia where they came back from eight down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed the way they approached Volchko, still can't say his name right.
Joey Volchko at Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia, the Georgia pitcher. They did a good job against him, but they lit up Aoki.
Mm-hmm.
When they brought Aoki in, that curveball, I think they hit two home runs against him. They had some good at-bats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he went an inning and two-thirds, four hits, four runs, only had two strikeouts. Volchko still had 10 punch-outs and five and two-thirds, but they still had some pretty good bats against him, so –
Georgia had a lot of success against Hunter Elliott. This is somebody Arkansas's seen a lot.
Yes.
I mean, like he pitched against Arkansas at Baum. I think he might have started the game that Kendall Diggs hit a walk-off home run against Ole Miss in a pinch, or I think maybe he'd come in as a pinch hitter earlier in the game. But he hit a walk-off home run against Ole Miss 4 years ago. Elliott, I remember I was interviewing Elliott in Omaha in 2022. Like, if you go back, if you put yourself back in, you know, 2022, there's no way you're thinking that this guy's still playing college baseball. But he's had the injuries. I think he missed all of one season and most of another with an injury. He's still, with this role that they're getting ready to pass at the NCAA level, could get another year of eligibility next year if he wants it at Ole Miss. Think about that. But he's been good against Arkansas, and I mentioned that to Van Horn last night in the press conference, and you know his reaction, and rightfully so, was he's been pretty good against everybody except for Georgia last week. Georgia lit him up. It was probably the worst outing of his career. I think he gave up 8 runs, 9 hits, 3 2/3 innings.
Yeah, that's right. Only had 2 strikeouts. I went back and watched the highlights of that. Phil sent me a text earlier. Lefties are 4 for 28 against him. Righties are 11 for 38. So be interested to see what Dave does with the lineup. But I know we've seen him. We know how he's going to attack us. I think that helps a lot. You know, there's a pretty good track record there. I think we'll do well against him. I really do. And our lefties aren't typical lefties. Our lefties hit lefties well. So I think we'll do well against him.
The guy that I was told to watch out for Ole Miss is their game 2 starter, Townsend. I'm told he's really good, can tunnel his pitches. I think he throws 5 pitches, and they think that there's a very high ceiling for him.
Yeah, 27 and 2/3 innings, 23 hits, 8 walks, 36 punch-outs. League sitting 217 against him. The whip is 1.12. Yeah, everything I've read is said he's really good. And then the day 3 guy, what's his name? Taylor or something. I can't read my writing. But he threw a really good game against Georgia. He went 6 innings against Georgia. So
he probably had the best weekend of everybody.
Yeah, so he did really well against that lineup, and that's a potent lineup. So
you know, I wrote this down last week because I was thinking that maybe Colin Fisher could give Arkansas some length against Missouri, and he never did. But I wrote this down because I through 2 games against Mizzou, Arkansas had gotten 13 innings out of its starting pitching. The entire weekend before that, they got 13 innings out of starters against Georgia, 13 and a third against Alabama, 13 and 2/3 against Auburn, 7 and 2/3 against Florida, 14 against South Carolina, 15 against Mississippi State. Again, they got 13 combined out of Dietz and Gibbler. Now, they ended up only getting 14 and a third because Fisher didn't have a good day in game 3 against Missouri. But I do feel like if Dietz and Gibbler can kind of continue on this track that they're on, and it feels like they've been on this for a couple of weeks now, it's going to help Arkansas because it feels like they've been doing a good job of taking pressure off of the bullpen those first 2 games.
Yeah, I think so. Especially Dietz on Friday night. I think I like that matchup, especially as much as these guys swing and miss. Ole Miss is a swing and miss team. I think they're going to struggle with the stuff that Dietz is going to throw out there. And I think Cole Gibbler's gotten better. Every start, he's gotten better. So I think we'll do well. Yeah, I don't care where the wind's blowing. They still got to hit the ball.
85, 86, and 87. Does that mean anything to you?
Should it?
Those are the number of matchups after this weekend that Dave Van Horn and Mike Bianco will have coached against each other. The 85th, 86th, and 87th games.
You sent me that Bianco interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He talked a little bit about facing Van Horn
toward
the end of that. And I talked to Dave yesterday a little bit about the fact that they both came out of the Southland Conference. And it's actually a pretty impressive list of coaches who have come out of the Southland, to be honest with you. It's interesting to me that they kind of had a similar career trajectory. Like, I mean, you think about Bianco played for Skip Bertman at LSU. He was an assistant coach for him. Van Horn played for DeBryan, was an assistant coach at Arkansas for a little bit. Now, the middle part, or like maybe the early part of their career post, you know, their alma mater went differently. But they do have the Southland. And it just feels like I kind of think that sometimes people don't like each other who are like them. Mm-hmm. And you're probably not going to like what I'm going to say right now, but like I feel like in the way Ole Miss competes, I feel like there's a lot of similarities in Arkansas. Like those are, I think they're both teams that are really hard to put away. Now the antics that Ole Miss has and everything, that's different from Arkansas, but I do think they compete hard. And I don't know. I just feel like you look at Bianco and you look at Van Horn and you look at the trajectories of their career. There's just a lot of similarities there, and you add in how their teams play hard.
Yeah, well, my hatred for Ole Miss has softened a little bit because mm-hmm. of what you just said. They do play hard, and they don't do – I mean, you know, I think watching some of the stuff that goes on with Tennessee, mm-hmm. with Vandy and all that, that's made me – it's made me dislike Ole Miss.
Like Ole Miss was out ahead of everybody with all of this, and now several teams have passed them by and –
Yeah, and I think it started for me with that 22 team. They had that veteran team. They just went out and played hard.
Elko
they
didn't and do Rodriguez.
A lot of, yeah, and... Elko. I mean, I loved Elko. I mean, playing with a torn ACL. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just I started to soften on it a little bit. Before then, I just couldn't stand them. And I think it's changed a little bit, and I do appreciate the way they play ball. They play hard.
Like, I mean, think about it. By the end of the weekend, Van Horn and Bianco will have coached 87 games against each other. Somebody told me this morning, it's like, think of the number of coaches who were in the SEC who never made it to 87 games, period.
Yeah.
In the SEC. Crazy. There have been some.
Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting to think about it that way.
I was trying to decipher Bianco's answer when a guy asked if they were friends or mm-hmm. however, you know, and I was trying to figure out is that.
I've actually watched them interact before. It was during the Super Regional. So it's been 7 years ago. But, you know, it was one of those things where one was coming in to do interviews with the TV announcers and he's leaving and the other one's there and they talk. It seemed to me like they got along great.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, Bianco's answer was basically he's like, you know, hey, when I'm not at the baseball field, I'm with my family. Yeah. I don't know that I got a whole lot of friends in baseball.
I think he said something about we don't vacation together or something.
Yeah. Breaking news. All right, once again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're proudly family-owned since 1976. They're trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. You can learn more or schedule service at H&RTireAndAuto.com. We'll have another show tomorrow. Joe Healy from D1 Baseball's in town. He'll be in here to help us break down this Arkansas Ole Miss series some more and talk about the conference in baseball. Hope to see you there or at our website, WholeHogSports.com.